But I did. Well, Sunday night, I went to meeting. I had to talk in meeting. They were very generous with me. They gave me the full time, which I wasn't very pleased on. But anyhow, I don't exactly know what I talked about, because there was that little girl in the congregation that every way I'd look, I could see her. And after the meeting, they all come up to wish me all the success in the world, old and young. This little girl didn't. She stood back. But all the other girls, both the ones that I'd known before and the new ones, come up. But she stood down there alone. And when the last of them said good night, I walked down where she was standing. I says, "Miss Collins, do you mind if I walk home with you?" She says, "Well, I live down the river." I says, "Well, that should make it better." But she says, "My girlfriend, Miss Goff, asked me if I would stay up with her tonight. So if you don't mind, you can walk over to her home with me." So I went, they invited me in. We spent a very pleasant evening. Well, that was it. I started to work in the mines, back to my old jobs in the mines. I guess I was born to be in the mines. So I spent a day or two home, and the other girl left the next morning. After that, she left Lehigh and went down to Milford, where her brother lived. I never seen her again for years. Never wrote to her, she never to me. But the magnet was in that other little girl. I had a girl missionary friend in Springfield, Illinois. I had charge of the company there, the Southern Illinois District. And I had four girls under my supervision. The elders were to get out and make friends, and they were to pick up where the elders left off. And I was an odd one. I was to go with these girls, introduce them, and tell them they was on their own. Well, that's the only girls that I'd ever spoken to in Illinois, other than teaching the gospel. Well, to make a long story short, in September, we were married. I got a good job in the mines, but she wanted to finish school, so I made arrangements with my sister to pay her board and go to school, and I'd go back to mines. So that was the only courtship we had. But we have a wonderful family, and if we've ever had a quarrel, thank God I've forgotten it. But she's a wonderful woman. So I think that was the first days of my mission. But I found out I had a bigger mission in the mines than I ever dreamed of having in the mission field. I don't know how the news come, unless it was through the superintendent. Someone had told him that I knew him as the superintendent of the Scranton mine. And it was she that told me to call him up and see if he was still a job. So I did. She then was to run the switchboard in the telephone office. And I don't know how, but she and this other little girl, Eunice, we'll call her, had gone her last year in high school together, and she'd got this job at the telephone company, and Eunice was in her last year, the next following year. Well, I was surprised, and the superintendent came over to the bunkhouse and said, "Mr. Hutchings." I looked up, and I says, "Well, I'm just John. I'm not Mr. Hutchings." "Oh, no, you're not. I've been talking to one of your friends." And she was a lady. And I said, "Who on earth could that?" "Well, the switch girl, the telephone operator at Lehigh. And she wants to know if it'll be all right if I spend a half hour every night on the telephone. She wouldn't make a record of it there, and for me not here. What do you think about it?" You know, the thought struck me, could that be Eunice? So I thought, well, it couldn't be anywhere. We're a long way, 30, 40 miles away. So I said, it'll be all right. So I was prepared at 9 o'clock to be at the company office, take over the telephone. And that's where all my courting was done. When I got there, instead of Miss Southwick, she'd invited Miss College to come. And when I picked up, I says, "This Mabel?" She says, "Why, no. This is John, isn't it?" And I said, "Yes." "Well, I'm Miss College." I pretty nice swallowed that telephone. I said, "Well, I thought it was Mabel Goodmanson that was calling me." He said, "Well, it was, but it was me that wanted you." So practically every night, we had a conversation, month after month and month after month. And it got so that I trusted that girl more than I trusted anyone in life. My own family had deserted me. They hadn't written to me in 3 years that I was on a mission. And the young people in 3 years grow up, but I really wasn't acquainted with anybody. That's why I enjoyed being alone in the mines where there was nothing but men. But every night, I'd give the three rings, and that was the Lehigh ring. Then it wasn't numbers. And she would be there waiting. So all of our courting was done on the telephone. And I tell you, it wasn't much. But I soon just thought, I'm going back to Lehigh. And it was in late September, she was finishing up her last year in high school. And I just felt the urge. It was the latter part of September, and I thought, maybe I can go and get a 2 weeks leave of absence, come back after Thanksgiving. So I did. Well, needless to say, I spent every night with that young lady. And we promised each other. And that was the amount of my courtship. But after I was 19 years old, I soon found out that working in Lehigh, the clay beds, where I could be home every night, isn't what I wanted. There wasn't mining clay, wasn't mining ore. And within me, that desire to find something. I went to Bingham, and there I worked in the mines there. Worked in the Highland Boy. I was very successful there. I won't go into that, but we were promised to each other, and so my checks I would send to her. And I wrote a letter to Mr. Chipman, who was the president of the bank, said to Miss College was going to do my banking business and to acknowledge her, and to give her a reasonable amount, because her parents were very, very poor. The poor kid, she went to school all one winter with just one dress. But it was clean, always immaculate, but patched. Her hair was always beautiful, and lots of it hung down big tail below her belt. And she was just a good little human being. And so it wasn't very long until I asked her to change her name. And she gladly consented. And we were married in the temple. I immediately went back to work, left her at home. I went to work in Bingham, and she did all my business at the bank. Of course, now she took out enough to live on and lived in my home. It was her home now. And I think in all those years, that was 1910, I don't think we have ever quarreled. You know, that doesn't interest a soul but me her. We have a wonderful family. Then I found that I can make money much faster not being the slave to a superintendent, but lease mines. So I started to lease. I leased the old Scranton mine that they thought was worked out. It was combination of cerussite and zinc crystallized, both crystallized. Had to send the shipments all to Denver. They couldn't handle it in Utah because of the combination. They had no way of separating the zinc from the lead. So that was quite expensive, but I knew that I could make at it. So I went out, went to the mine, and hired 4 Mexicans. I found that the Mexicans were the most likable people of any of the foreigners. I found, too, to my sorrow, that the cousin Jacks, dare I say English, was the trash. But I can go in the stove in the morning, tell those men what I would like done. Not any fear. Go back the next day, tell them where to continue. It was always done, cleaned up nice. Never had one question asked. Only they would ask me if I would talk to them in English. And I told them I'd be glad to, or else I couldn't talk at all, because I could only say good morning and a few words like that in Mexican. So we got along fine. Well, I stayed with mining for a long time. Then I went back to get a better job where I could be home. In fact, the last 2 years of mining, I took a tent and took my wife out with me. We had a baby boy then. That was a very interesting part of my life. Those men, there was about 90 of them, they were all foreigners, all Finns. We call them Finns, they're from Finland. But wonderful, and Mexicans, I forgot the Mexicans. They were wonderful. I didn't have to be with them, it'd be done. And actually, they knew more about it than I did. But I had the lease. And we took over that old mine and made very good. My wife brought her baby out and put up a tent, a big tent, In fact, it was a two-room tent. And I think some of the most humorous things that ever happened in my life was in that tent, and so the most wonderful. Our little boy learned to walk on the side of that mountain, which was almost too steep to climb. Sometimes he'd lay, fall down and roll till he hit a cedar tree, and then he'd stop, get up and roll again. But one day my wife was bathing him. Water was her problem. We had to buy all the water, and it had to come from Del Monte, about 9 miles down the canyon, the only well there. And to keep a wife, wives are not like men, they have to bathe every night. So that, and the baby had to bathe almost continually, but I didn't mind it. I could easily bathe, get my own bathing done after she did, because the water was never dirty. It was pretty red by the time I got out of that old zinc oxide mine. But one day she was bathing the baby, and he had gotten hold of a lot of peanuts. One of the miners liked him. He was a great big giant of a man. And every time that little fellow, he'd learned to walk now, holding my hand, he could walk down the hill. And he called this man Peanuts, because he always gave him peanuts. And he immediately find out this man, pull his leg, Peanuts, Peanuts. And of course, he'd get peanuts. And this particular time, they had candy there. Very seldom had candy, only licorice and stick candy. But this time they had mixed candy. And all these miners wanted to buy something for the baby. And they would buy candy and peanuts. And they put them in a big sack all the little fellow could carry. And he come up and had that big sack. And his mother said to him, "What on earth? Peanuts gave them to me. Peanuts." And she looked in. How much have you eaten? Lots. She went bathing, and he went in convulsions. Well, she gave a big scream, run out of the tent opening, and the white man that was with me, was a fellow by the name of Coates, he was coming down the hill. And he heard her screaming, and he ran down there and seen what was happening. And he run, and I don't know what he's going to do, but he run down to the telephone, phone to Eureka, and try to get a doctor in the last time. But when those Finns and Mexicans heard that baby was sick, up they come, every man of them. Each one had a bottle of whiskey, a quart bottle of whiskey, for the baby. I daren't tell them that I couldn't. I thanked them, told them that we would drop the baby with it. And they went away happy as larks. They'd done something for that baby. But they were afraid of my wife. I don't know why I'm telling you these. It's part of my history, though. But I married a little woman that had been born and raised 3 miles out of town, right on Jordan River. She was the oldest of that family. Her brothers were younger than she. And lots of sagebrush just across the river. It was all big sage and rabbit brush. And she would take the boy that was older, 3 years younger, with her to carry the rabbits. And she'd go and shoot the rabbits. So ammunition with her was scarce. They were poor. But I bought a little shotgun. I don't think you've ever seen one. 32-gauge shotgun. Little shells about that long, about the size. well, the same size as the third two pistol. But she never missed getting her rabbit or sage hen. And she'd go and her brother would carry him home. Same with the mines. She'd go when everybody was at work up in the mountains. Shoot, we had first meal every night. But she was that kind of a woman. And another interesting thing about my mining days, they were all interesting, but this, she was so concerned. I collected specimens. I always did collect all my life. We had some of the rarest formations in those old Scranton mines, a combination of zinc and lead. And it would crystallize in the most beautiful crystals. And I collected those, and I had two or three New York Museum of Natural History, and also the Peale Museum was quite interested in things like that. Afterwards, the British Museum got in on the act. Well, I'd send them things like that. And we got along very fine. But one time, we were asleep. We slept in half the tent, and the other half was divided off. It was our kitchen. A little two-hole kitchen stove. And she had never taken the frying pan off the stove. Turned up so we had to be careful with water. So she'd burn it with the flame and then turn it upside down over the burner and let it burn a while to get red hot and clean for frying in the morning. Because we just didn't have hardly enough water to drink. By the time the men all got their face washed and everything, water was scarce article. She woke me up one night, it was just daylight breaking. Just getting gray. She says, "John, I can hear something." I said, "Oh, go to sleep, it's a cricket." "No, there's something sounds like it's scratching." And I listened. I said, "Oh, the old waterman lived down the canyon, at the foot of the canyon, and he had a lot of chickens. And he kept the boarding house and chickens. He'd sell them to the cook. So he made money two ways, hauling water and also these things." I says, "Well, it might be a chicken." "Oh, I guess it is. I guess that's a chicken down at Stringfellow's." And it was just down the bottom of the canyon. And just then, I could find out what it was. All the perfume of hell broke loose in that tent. And I opened the door and slid the canvas door back, and there's the...